This is war. We don't have time. We can take the bastard with us, but we can't miss this chance. Stop acting like a terrorist! We're better than that!
I stare down at him, furious in the moment. He should be my simplest, strongest friendship. But because of loss, everything is twisted between us. Even with him, there's so many layers to the pain. So many levels of fear and recrimination and guilt for both of us. They once called Sevro my shadow. He's not any longer. And I think I've been bitter at him these last hours because they're proof of that. He's his own man, with his own tides. Just as I think he's been bitter with me because I didn't come back as the Reaper. I came back a man he didn't recognize. And now that I'm trying to be the force he wanted, the force that's making decisions, he doubts me because he senses weakness. And that's always made him afraid.
Sevro, give me the detonator.
Nah.
He opens the detonator's priming shield, revealing the red thumb toggle inside the protective casing. If he presses down, 1,000 kilograms of high-yield explosives will detonate across Phobos. It won't destroy the moon, but it'll demolish the moon's economic infrastructure. Helium will not flow for months, years, and all the fears of Quicksilver will be realized. Society will suffer, but so will we.
Sevro.
You got my father killed! You got Quinn, and Pax, and Weed, and Harpy, and Leah killed because you thought you were smarter than everyone else. Because you didn't kill the Jackal when you could. Because you didn't kill Cassius when you could. But unlike you, I don't flinch.
Severo's thumb twitches for the detonation switch. But before he presses down, I activate a jam field with the jammer on my belt, blocking the signal from leaving the room.
You son of a bitch.
He rushes for the door to get beyond the field. I reach for him. He spins under my hands. My jammer is not a strong one, so he doesn't need to get far away from me. He bowls into the hallway. I scramble after.
Sevro, stop!
I say, as I push into the hallway. He's already 10 meters down the hall, running at full speed to get clear of my jamming field so his signal can go out. He's quicker than I am in these small hallways. He's going to escape. I pull my pulse fist out, aim it over his head, and fire it. But my aim is off, and it nearly takes off his head. His mohawk sizzles smoke. He stops dead in his tracks and wheels back on me, face feral.
Sevro, I didn't mean...
With a howl of rage, he charges me. Caught off guard, I stumble back from the manic man. He closes in a flurry. I block his first punch, but an uppercut smashes into my jaw, slamming my teeth together, rocking me back. My teeth close on a corner of my tongue. I taste blood and almost fall. If Mickey hadn't made bones proper, Sevro might have shattered my jaw. Instead, he curses, gripping his fist in pain. I move with the uppercut and lash out with my left leg, kicking him so hard in the ribs that his whole body carries sideways into the wall, denting the metal bulkhead. I throw a straight jab with my right fist. He ducks under and my punch lands on Durasteel. Pain rattles up my arm. I grunt. He flies into me, under the left elbow I swing at his head, ratcheting strikes into my stomach, aiming for my balls. I twist back, manage to grab one of his arms, and swing him around as hard as I can. He slams, face first, into the wall, spilling to the ground.
Where is it?
I search his body for the detonator.
Sevro!
He scissor kicks my legs, tangling them, dropping me to the ground so we're grappling instead of trading punches. He's the better wrestler, and it's all I can do to keep him from choking me out from behind as his legs form a triangle, heels locked in front of my face, legs pressing in on both sides of my neck. I lift him off the ground, but I can't dislodge him. He's dangling upside down behind me, spine to spine, heels still in my face, trying to elbow my balls through my legs from behind. I can't reach for him. I can't breathe. So I grab his calves on my neck and spin my body. He slams into the metal. Once, twice. Then he finally lets go, scrambling off. I'm on him in a flash, throwing a tight series of cravat elbows into his face. He catches my chin with the crown of his head accidentally.
Dumb son of a bitch!
I mutter, stumbling back. He's gripping his own head in pain.
Stupid lanky ass!
He aims a kick at my midsection. I take the blow, catching the leg with my left arm, and exchange it for a haymaker right that crashes into his skull with all my weight behind it. He goes down hard, like I'm a hammer driving a nail into the floor. He tries to rise, but I push him down with a boot. He lies under it, heaving breaths. I'm dizzy and panting, body hating me for what I'm doing to it.
Are you done?
He nods. I pull back my boot and extend a hand to help him up. He rolls to his back and reaches for it, then lurches up with his left boot heel, straight into my groin. I fall and dry heave beside him. Crippling nausea swells from my lower back into my balls and my stomach. Beside me, he's panting like a dog. At first, I think he's laughing. But when I look up, I'm shocked to see tears in his eyes. He lies on his back. Huge sobs make his ribcage shudder. He turns away, tries to hide from me to stop the tears from coming, but it makes it worse.
Several?
I sit up, feeling ripped apart by the sight of him. I don't hold him, but I put a hand on his head, and he surprises me by not flinching away, but instead crawling up to put his head on my knee. I put my other hand on his shoulder. In time, the sobs slow, and he blows the snot from his nose. But he doesn't move. It's like the moment after a lightning storm. The air, kinetic and vibrating. After several minutes, he clears his throat and pushes himself up to sit with his legs folded under him in the center of the hall. His eyes are puffy, ashamed. He plays with his hands, the tattoos and mohawk making him look like something pulled from a deranged children's book.
You tell anyone I cried, I'll find a dead fish, put it in a sock, hide it in your room, and let it putrefy.
Fair enough.
The detonator lies off to the side, close enough so we can both reach for it. Neither of us do.
I hate this. People like that.
He glances up at me.
I don't want him to be a son. I don't want to be like Quicksilver.
You aren't.
He doesn't believe that.
At the Institute, I'd wake up in the morning, and I think I was still in my dreams. Then I'd feel cold, and I'd slowly start remembering where I was. And there's dirt and blood under my nails, and all I want to do was go back to sleep, to be warm. But I knew I had to get up and face a world that didn't give a shit. That's how I feel every morning now. I'm afraid all the time. I don't want to lose anyone. I don't want to let them down.
You haven't. If anything, I let you down.
No.
You were right. We both know it. It's my fault your father's dead. It's my fault that whole night happened.
Was still a shit thing of me to say.
He raps his knuckles on the ground.
I'm always saying shit things.
I'm glad you said it.
Why?
Because we've both forgotten we didn't get here on our own. You and I should be able to say anything to each other. That's how this works. It's how we work. We don't walk on eggshells. We talk to each other. Even if we say shit that's hard to hear.
I see how alone he feels. How much weight he carried. It's how I felt when Cassius stabbed me and left me for dead at the Institute. He needs to share the weight. I don't know how else to tell him that. This stubbornness, this intransigence, looks insane from the outside. But inside, he felt just as I did when Roke questioned me.
Do you know why I helped you at the Institute when you and Cassius were gonna drown in that lock? It's because of how they look at you. It wasn't like I thought you were a good Primus. You were as smart as a bag of wet farts. But I saw them. Pebble. Clown. Quinn. Roke.
He almost trips over that last name.
I'd watch you at your fires in the gulches when Titus was in the castle. I saw you teach Leah how to cut a goat's throat, even when she was afraid to do it. I wanted to do that too. To join.
Why didn't you?
I was afraid you wouldn't want me.
They look at you that way now. Don't you see that?
No, they don't. The whole time I tried to be you. Tried to be Pops. Didn't work. I could tell everyone just wished it was me that the Jackal captured. Not you.
You know that's not true.
It is. You're better than I am. I saw you. When you looked down at Tinos, saw your eyes, the love in them, the urge to protect these people. I tried feeling it, but every time I looked down at the refugees, I just hated them. For being weak, for hurting each other, for being stupid and not knowing what we've gone through to help them.
He swallows and picks at the cuticles of his stubby fingers.
I know, it's nasty. But it's what it is.
He seems so vulnerable here, in this hall. The rage taken out of us from the fight. He's not looking for a lecture. Leadership has worn him down, alienated him from even his howlers. Right now, he's looking to feel like he's not like Quicksilver, or the Jackal, or any of the Golds we fight against. He's mistakenly assumed I'm something better than he is. And part of that is my fault.
I hate them too.
Don't.
I do. At least, I hate that they remind me of what I was. Or could have been. Shit. I was a little idiot. You would have hated me. I was comfortable and arrogant and selfish on my knees. I liked being blind to everything because I was in love. And I thought for some reason that living for love was the most valiant thing in all of the worlds. He even made Io into something in my head that she wasn't. Romanticized her and the life we had. Probably because I saw my father die for some cause. And I saw all he left behind, so I tried to cling to the life he abandoned.
I trace the lines on my palm.
It makes me feel small to think I started doing all this for her. She was everything to me, but I was just a piece of her life. When the Jackal had me, that's all I could think about. That I wasn't enough. That our child wasn't enough. Part of me hates her for that. She didn't know all this would happen. Wasn't even aware that the worlds had been terraformed. All she could have known was that she was making a point to the couple thousand people in Lycos. And was that worth dying for? Was that worth killing a child for?
I gesture down the hall.
Now all these people think she was divine or something. A perfect martyr. But she was just a girl. And she was brave. But she was stupid and selfish and selfless and romantic. But she died before she could ever be more. Think how much she could have done with her life. Maybe we could have done this together.
I laugh bitterly and lean my head against the wall.
I think the shittest part about getting old is now we're smart enough to see the cracks in everything.
We're 23, dipshit.
Well, I feel 80.
You look it.
I flip him the crux, earning a smile.
Do you think she watches you from the Vale? Does your father?
I'm about to say I don't know, when I catch the intentness of his gaze. He's not asking about my family as much as he's asking about his own. Maybe even Quinn, who he always loved, but never had the courage to tell. With all his savagery, it's hard to remember just how vulnerable he is. He's adrift, alienated from red and gold. No home, no family, no view of a world after war. Right now, I'd say anything to make him feel like he's loved.
Yes. I believe she watches me,
I say, with more confidence than I feel.
And my father. And yours, too.
So, they have beer in the Vale?
Don't be sacrilegious. Only whiskey. Streams of it. As far as the eye can see.
His laughter stitches more of me together. Bit by bit, I feel like my friends are coming back to me. Or maybe I'm coming back to them. Suppose it's the same thing, really. I always told Victra to let people in. I could never take my own advice because I knew one day I'd have to betray them. That the foundation of our friendship was a lie. Now I'm with people who know who I am. And I'm afraid to let them in because I'm afraid of losing them. Disappointing them. But it's this bond that Sevro and I share that makes us stronger than we were before. It's what we have that the Jackal doesn't.
Do you know what happens after this? If we kill Octavia, the Jackal. If we somehow win.
No.
That, right there, is a problem. I don't have the answer. I won't pretend to. But I won't let Augustus be right. I won't bring chaos into this world without at least a plan for something better. For that, we need allies, like Quicksilver. We need to stop playing terrorist. And we need a real army.
Sevro picks the detonator back up and breaks it in two.
What are your orders, Reap?
Sevro and I stalk back into the ready room, where the howlers are packed and prepared to depart the station. Rollo and a dozen of his people watch us tensely from their side of the room. They know they're about to be abandoned. Quicksilver follows behind me in a wheelchair, restraints left behind in his cell. He's agreed to our plan, with a few adjustments.
Well, look at this.
Victra sees our bruises and bloody knuckles.
You two finally talked.
She looks to Ragnar.
See?
Shit's sorted.
And the rich man? He wears no manacles.
That's because he's a son of Ares, Rags. Didn't you know?
Quicksilver's a son. And I'm secretly a Helldiver.
She looks back and forth at our faces.
Wait. You're serious? Do you have proof?
I'm sorry to hear of your mother, Victra. But it is a pleasure to see you walking, truly. I've been with the Sons for over 20 years. I have hundreds of hours of conversations with Fitchner to prove it.
He's a son. Can we move on?
Well, I'll be damned. Mother was right about you. Always said you had secrets. I thought it was something sexual. That you liked horses or something.
Sevro shifts uncomfortably.
So you found us a way off this rock, rich man?
Not quite. Darrow?
We're not leaving.
Rollo and his men stir in the corner. The howlers exchange confused looks.
Maybe you want to tell us what's going on?
Screwface asks gruffly.
Let's start with who's in charge. Is it you?
Howler one.
Sevro punches my shoulder.
Howler two.
I pat his in turn.
Prime?
The howlers nod in concert.
First order of business, policy change. Who has pliers?
I look around until Holiday pulls hers from her bomb kit and tosses them to me. I open my mouth and stick the pliers to the back right molar where the Arcles 9 suicide tooth was implanted. With a grunt, I tear it out and set the tooth on the table.
I've been captured before. I will not be captured again. So this is worthless to me. I don't plan on dying, but if I do, I die with my friends. Not in a cell, not on a podium, with you.
I hand the pliers to Sevro. He jerks out his own back tooth, spitting the blood on the table.
I die with my friends.
Ragnar does not wait for the pliers. He pulls out his back tooth with his bare fingers, eyes wide with delight as he sets the huge bloody thing on the table.
I die with my friends.
One by one, they pass around the pliers, pulling out their teeth and tossing them down. Quicksilver watches all the while, staring at us like we're a pack of mad hooligans, no doubt wondering about what he's gotten himself into. But I need my men to lose this heavy mantle they wear. With that poison in their skulls, they felt the death sentences had already been read, and they were just waiting for the hangman to come knocking. Slag that. Death'll have to earn its bounty. I want them to believe in this, in each other, in the idea that we might actually win and live. For the first time, I do. After I've detailed my instructions to my men, and they depart to execute the orders, I return with Severo to the Sons of Ares control room and ask for them to prepare a direct link.
To the Citadel in Aegea, please.
The Sons of Ares turn to look at me to see if they've misheard.
On the double, friends, we don't have all day.
I stand in front of the holo camera with Severo.
Think they already know we're here?
Probably not quite yet.
Think he's gonna piss himself?
Let's hope. Remember, nothing about Mustang and Cassius being here. We're keeping that one in the pocket.
The direct hololink goes through, and the face of a wan young copper administrator looks sleepily back at us.
Citadel General Comm, how may I direct your...
She blinks suddenly at our images on the display, wipes sleep from her eyes, and loses all faculty of speech.
I would like to speak with the Arch-Governor.
And may I say who is calling?
It's the bloody damn Reaper of Mars.
One moment, please.
The copper's face is replaced by the Pyramid of the Society. Terribly predictable Vivaldi plays as we wait. Severo taps his fingers on his leg and murmurs his little tune under his breath.
If your heart beats like a drum and your legs a little wet.
Several minutes later, the Jackal's pale face appears before us. He wears a jacket with a high white collar, and his hair is parted on the side. He does not leer at us. If anything, he looks amused as he continues to eat his breakfast.
The Reaper and Ares,
he says, in a low drawl, mocking his own courtesy. He wipes his mouth on a napkin.
You departed so quickly last time, I didn't have time to say farewell. I must say, you're looking positively radiant, Darrow. Is Victra with you?
Adrius, as you're no doubt aware, there has been an explosion at Sun Industries, and your silent partner, Quicksilver, has gone missing. I know it's a mess of jurisdiction, and the evidence won't be sorted for hours, maybe days. So I wanted to call and clarify the situation. We, the Sons of Ares, have kidnapped Quicksilver.
He sets his spoon down to sip from his white coffee cup.
I see. To what end?
We will be holding him for ransom until you release all political prisoners illegally detained in your jails and all low colors concentrated in internment camps. Additionally, you are to take responsibility for the murder of your father, publicly.
Is that all?
The Jackal asks, not displaying a flicker of emotion. Though I know he's wondering how we discovered Quicksilver was his ally.
You also have to personally kiss my pimply ass.
Lovely.
The Jackal looks off the screen to someone.
My agents tell me a flight moratorium was initiated 10 minutes after the attack on Sun Industries, and the vessel which fled the scene disappeared into the hollows. Am I to assume, then, that you're still on, Phobos?
I pause, as if caught off guard.
If you do not comply, Quicksilver's life is forfeit.
Lamentably, I do not negotiate with terrorists, especially ones who may be recording my conversation to broadcast it for political gain. I listened to your proposal. Now listen to mine. Run. Now, while you can. But know, wherever you go, wherever you hide, you cannot protect your friends. I'm going to kill them all and put you back in the darkness with their severed heads for company. There is no way out, Darrow. This I promise you.
He kills the signal.
Huh. Think he'll send the Bone Riders before the Legions?
Let's hope. Time to get moving. The Hollows is a city of cages. Row upon row, column upon column of rusty metal homes linked together in the null gravity as far as the eye can see here in the heart of Phobos. Each cage a life in miniature. Clothing floats on hooks. Little portable thermal press grills sizzle with the foods of 100 different regions of Mars. Paper pictures cling to iron cage walls by bits of tape, showing distant lakes, mountains, and families gathered together. Everything here is dull and grey. The metal of the cages, the limp clothing, even the tired and wasted faces of the oranges and reds who are trapped here, thousands of kilometers from home. Sparks of color dance up from the datapads and hollow visor that glow through the city, bits of dream scattered on twisted scrap metal. Men and women sit penitent over their little displays, watching their little programs, forgetting where they are in favor of where they'd wish to be. Many have taped paper or blankets over the sides of their walls to give them some semblance of privacy from their neighbors. But it's the scent and the sound you cannot escape. The throaty, unceasing rattle of cage doors slamming shut, locks clicking, men laughing and coughing, generators humming, public holocans yapping and barking the dog language of distraction, all stirred and boiled together to make a thick soup of noise and shadowy light. Rollo once lived in negative south end of the city. Now it is deep syndicate territory. The Sons were chased out more than 2 months ago. I fly along the lines of plastic rope that weave through the cage canyons, passing dock workers and tower laborers who climb back to their little cage homes. They jerk their heads toward the throaty thrum of my new grab boots. It's an alien sound to them. One heard only over the Holovids or experiential virtual realities, low world greens hawk for 50 credits a minute. Most will never have seen a peerless scarred in the flesh, much less one in full armor. I'm a terrifying spectacle. It was 7 hours ago that my lieutenants and I clustered together in the Sons of Ares ready room, and I told them and Dancer back in Tinos my plan. 6 hours since I learned of Kavax's escape from our detention cell. Someone let him out. 5 hours since Victor delivered Quicksilver and Mateo back to their tower, where Quicksilver has spent the remainder of the night activating his own cells and contacts in the Blue Hives, making preparation for this moment. 4 hours since Quicksilver joined his security teams with Sons of Ares and gave them access to his armories and his weapons depots, and we received word that two Augustus destroyers were inbound from the orbital docks. 3 hours since Ragnar and Rollo took 1,000 Sons of Ares to the garbage hangars on level 43C to prepare their skiffs. 2 hours since one of Quicksilver's private yachts was prepped for launch. 1 hour since the Society destroyers deployed 4 troop transports to dock at the Skyresh Interplanetary Spaceport, and the new coat of blood-red paint on my armor dried, and I donned it to march to war. All is ready. Now, I carve a wake of silence into the heart of the Hollows. My bone-white razor is on my arm. At my side flies Severo, wearing the huge spiked helmet of Ares with pride. He brought it along, but the rest of his armor is borrowed from Quicksilver. It's cutting-edge tech, better even than the suits we wore for Augustus. Holiday follows behind, along with 100 Sons of Ares. The Sons are awkward on their grav boots. Some carry razors, others pulse fists, but per my orders, Not one wears a helmet as we fly. I wanted these low colors of the stacks witnessing our treason, so that they feel emboldened by reds and oranges and obsidians wearing the armor of the masters. The faces are a blur, 100,000 peering from the homes in every direction, pale and confused, most under the age of 40. Reds and oranges brought here with false promises, just like Rollo, with families down on Mars, just like Rollo. Neighbors point in my direction. I see my name on their lips. Somewhere, the Syndicate watchmen will be dialing their superiors, relaying the news to the police or the Securitas anti-terrorism apparatus that the Reaper lives, and he is on Phobos. I bait the beasts. As I coast into the central hub of the city, I say a silent prayer, willing Io to give me strength. There, like some pulsing electronic idol fenced in by metal bramble, a holographic display casts society comedy programming 100 meters long, 50 meters broad. It bathes the circle of cages around it in sickly neon light. Speakers laugh on cue. Blue light plays over my armor. Locks jingle as they're undone, and cages are pushed open so their inhabitants can sit on the edge and dangle their legs off to watch me without looking through the cage bars. Quicksilver's greens focus their helmet cameras on me. The sun's array around, eyes smoldering out at the low colors. My honor guard. Their red hair floating like 100 angry torch flames. Holiday and Ares flank me to either side, floating 200 meters in the air, surrounded by cages. Silence gripping the city, except the laugh track of the comedy. It's sick and weird as it cackles out of the speakers. I nod to Quicksilver's greens, and they cut the noise. And somewhere in his tower, the hacker teams he's assembled hijack every broadcast on the moon and issue commands to secondary data hubs on Earth, Luna, the asteroid belt, Mercury, the moons of Jupiter. So my message will burn across the blackness of space, taking over the data web that links mankind. Quicksilver is proving his allegiance with this broadcast, using the network he helped the Jackal build. This is not like Io's death, a viral video you have to dig for in the dark spaces of the HoloNet. This is a grand roar across the society, broadcasting on 10 billion holos to 18 billion people. They gave these screens to us as chains. Today, we make them hammers. Carnus Aubelona had his faults, but he was right when he said that all we have in this life is our shout into the wind. He shouted his own name, and I learned the folly in that. But before I begin the war that will claim me, one way or another, I will make my shout. And it will be something far greater than my own name. Far greater than a roar of family pride. It is the dream I've carried and shepherded since I was 16. Io appears beneath me on the hologram, replacing the comedy. A ghostly giant of the girl I knew. Her face is quiet and pale and angrier than in my dreams. Hair dull and stringy, clothing drab and ragged. But her eyes burn out from her grey surroundings, bright as the blood on her mangled back as she looks up from the metal whipping box. Her mouth barely seems to open, just a sliver of space between her lips. But her song bleeds from her, voice thin and fragile as a spring dream. She echoes across the metal city, louder than she echoed in that far-off lost city of stone. Her light flickering across the pale faces watching from their cages. These oranges and reds who never knew her in life, but hear her in death. They're silent and sad as she is walked to the gallows. I hear my vain cries, see myself sagging against grey hands. Feel I'm there again. The hard-packed dirt on my knees as the world falls out from under me. Augustus speaks with Pliny and Leto as frayed hemp loops around Io's neck. Hatred radiates from the faces in the stacks. I could no more stop Io's death than I can stop it now. It's as if it always has been. My wife falls. I flinch, hearing the rustling of her clothing, the creaking of the rope. And I look down at the hologram, forcing myself to watch as the boy I was stumbles forward to wrap his hands with their red sigils around her kicking legs. I watch him kiss her ankle and pull her feet with all his feeble strength. Her Himanthus falls, and I speak. I would have lived in peace, but my enemies brought me war. My name is Darrow of Lycos. You know my story. It is but an echo of your own. They came to my home and killed my wife, not for singing a song, but for daring to question their reign, for daring to have a voice. For centuries, millions beneath the soil of Mars have been fed lies from cradle to grave. That lie has been revealed to them. Now they've entered the world you know, and they suffer as you do. Man was born free, but from the ocean shores to the crater cities of Mercury, to the ice waste of Pluto, down to the mines of Mars, he is in chains. Chains made of duty, hunger, fear. Chains hammered to our necks by a race that we lifted up. A race that we empowered. Not to rule, not to reign, but to lead us from a world torn by war and greed. Instead, they have led us into darkness. They have used the systems of order and prosperity for their own gain. They expect your obedience, ignore your sacrifice, and hoard the prosperity that your hands create. To hold tight to their reign, they forbid our dreams, saying a person is only as good as the colors of their eyes, of their sigils. I remove my gloves and clench my right fist in the air, as Io did before she died. But unlike Io, my hands bear no sigils, removed by Mickey when I was carved in Tinos. I am the first soul in hundreds of years to walk without them. The silence in the hollows gives way to sounds of shock, fear.
But now, I stand before you, a man unbound. I stand before you, my brothers and sisters, to ask you to join me, to throw yourselves on the machines of industry, to unite behind the sons of Ares. Take back your cities, your prosperity. Dare to dream of better worlds than these. Slavery is not peace. Freedom is peace. And until we have that, it is our duty to make war. This is no license for savagery or genocide. If a man rapes, you kill him on the spot. If a man murders civilians, high or low, you kill him on the spot. This is war. But you are on the side of good, and that carries a heavy burden. We rise not for hate, not for vengeance, but for justice, for your children, for their future. I speak now to gold, to the Aureate who rule. I have walked your halls, broken your schools, eaten at your tables, and suffered your gallows. You tried to kill me. You could not. I know your power. I know your pride. And I have seen how you will fall. For
100 years, you have ruled over the dominion of man. And this is all you have given us. It is not enough. Today, I declare your rule to be at its end. Your cities are not your cities. Your vessels are not your vessels. Your planets are not your planets. They were built by us, and they belong to us, the common trust of man. Now, we take them back. Never mind the darkness you spread. Never mind the night you summon. We will rage against it. We will howl and fight till our last breath. Not just in the mines of Mars, but on the shores of Venus, on the dunes of Io's sulfur seas, in the glacial valleys of Pluto. We will fight in the towers of Ganymede and the ghettos of Luna and the storm-stricken oceans of Europa. And if we fall, others will take our place, because we are the tide and we are rising.
Then Severos slams his fist against his chest. Once, twice, thumping it rhythmically. It is echoed by the 200 sons of Ares, their fists pounding their chests, by the howlers. In the steel mesh of the cages, men and women thump their fists into the walls till it sounds like the heartbeat rising through the bowels of this vampire moon, up through the hives of blues, where they sit drinking coffee and studying gravitational mathematics under the warm lights of their intellectual communes, through the grey barracks in each precinct, among the silvers at their trading desks, the golds in their mansions and yachts. Out through the black ink that separates our little bubbles of life, before careening down into the halls of the Jackal's lonely hold on Attica, where he sits in his winter throne, surrounded by a sea of bent necks. There, our sound rattles in his ears. There, he hears my wife's heart beat on, and he cannot stop it as it goes down and down into the mines of Mars, playing on the screens as reds beat on their tables, and the copper magistrates watch in swelling fear as the miners look hatefully up through the duraglass that keeps them imprisoned. Her heart beats mutinously through the bustling oceanside promenades of the archipelagos of Venus, as sailboats float proudly in the harbour, and shopping bags hang in frightened hands, and golds look to their drivers, their gardeners, the men who power their cities. It beats through the tin-roofed mess halls of the wheat and soybean latifundia that cover the great plains of Earth, where reds use machines to toil under the huge sun to feed mouths of people they will never meet, in places they will never be. It beats even along the spine of the Empire, raging through the spiked city moon of Luna, passing by the Sovereign in her glass-high refuge to thunder on down snaking electrical wires and drying clothing lines to the lost city, where a pink girl makes breakfast after a long night of thankless work, where a brown cook leans away from his stove to hear as grease spatters his apron, and a grey watches from the window of his patrol skiff as a violet girl smashes the front door of a post office and his datapad summons him back to the station for emergency riot protocols. And it beats inside me, this terrible hope, as I know that the end has begun and I am finally awake.
Break the chains!
And my people roar back. I speak into my comms.
Ragnar, bring it down.
The greens cut to a different feed as the fists thump and the cages rattle, and we see a distant shot of the Society's military spire on Phobos. A Goliath of a building, with docks and vestibules for weapons, efficient and ugly as a crab. From it, the Jackal maintains his grip on the moon. There, The greys and obsidians will be donning armor under pale lights, rushing through metal halls in tight lines, stocking ammunition belts, and kissing pictures of their loved ones so they can come down to the hollows and make this heart stop beating. But they will never make it here. Because as fists pound even harder into cages, the lights of that military spire go black. All her power turned off by Rollo and his men, with the access cards provided by Quicksilver. We could have bombed the building, but I wanted a triumph of daring, of achievement, not destruction. We need heroes, not another Ash City. And so, a small squadron of a dozen maintenance skiffs coasts into view. Flat, ugly flyers designed to port reds and oranges like Rollo to their construction work on towers. Craggy stingrays covered with barnacles. But it isn't barnacles that cling to them now. Another camera takes a closer angle, and we can see each skiff is covered with hundreds of men. Reds and oranges in their clunky EVA suits. Almost half the Sons of Ares on Phobos. Boots against the deck, harnesses latched into exterior buckles of the ship. They carry their welding gear and have Quicksilver's weapons patched onto their legs with magnetic tape. Among them, 2 feet taller than the others, is their general, Ragnar Valaris, in armor freshly painted bone white, a red sling blade painted on the chest and back. As the skiffs near the Society military spire, they divide down the length of the building. Sons fire magnetic harpoons to tether the skiffs to the steel, and then they go with practiced ease along the lines, flying at implausible speeds as the little motors on their buckles pull them one by one along toward the building. It's like watching reds in the mines. The grace and nimbleness, even in the clunky suits, dazzle. More than 1,000 welders pour onto the vast building, like we did Quicksilver's spire. But they're not playing for stealth, and they're better in null gravity than we were. Magnetic boots clutching metal girders, they skitter across the building, melting through the viewports and entering with extreme prejudice. Dozens are ripped to shreds as greys inside fire railguns out the glass, but they fire back and pour inward. A Ripwing patrol banks in along the outside of the building and rakes 2 of the skiffs with chain guns. Men turn to mist. A Sun fires a rocket at the Ripwing. Fire blooms and vanishes, and the ship cracks in half in a gout of purple flame. The camera follows Ragnar as he breaches a window, enters a hall, and runs full tilt into a trio of gold knights. One who I recognize as the cousin of Priam, the man Severo killed in the passage, and whose mother owns the deed to Phobos. Ragnar flows through the young knight without stopping, swinging both his razors like scissors and ululating the war cry of his people, followed by a pack of heavily armed welders and laborers. I told him I wanted the spire. I didn't tell him how to take it. He walked off with Rollo, putting an arm around the man. Now the worlds watch a slave become a hero.
This moon belongs to you. Rise and take it. Rise, men of Mars. Women of Mars. Rise, you bloody damn bastards, rise.
Men and women are pulling themselves from their homes, donning their boots and jackets, pushing themselves toward us so that thousands clog the air avenues, crawling over the outside of the cages. The tide has risen, and I feel a deep terror in wondering exactly what it will wash away.
Rape and murder of innocents is punishable by death. This is war, but you're on the side of good. Remember that, you little shitheads. Protect your brothers. Protect your sisters. All residents of 1A through 4C, you are to take the armory in level 14.
Severo seizes control of the battle, and the Howlers and Sons disperse to organize the mob. It isn't an army, but a battering ram. Many will die, and when they die, more will rise in their place. This is just one of the stacked cities of Phobos. The Sons will supply them with weapons, but there won't be nearly enough to go around. Their sword is the press of flesh. Severo will lead them, spend them, Victra and Quicksilver's spires will guide them, and the moon will fall to the rebellion. But I will not be here to see it. Phobos is in uproar. Detonations shake the moon as Holiday and I run through the halls. Golds and silvers evacuate the needles in their flashing luxury yachts as kilometers beneath, the hollows swarms with packs of low-color mobs armed with welding torches, fusion cutters, pipes, black market scorchers, and old-fashioned slug throwers. The mobs are overwhelming the tram systems and passages to gain access to the mid-sector and needles, while the Society military garrison, caught reeling from the attack on their headquarters, rushes to stop the upward migration. The legions have training and organization on their side. We have numbers and surprise, not to mention fury. No matter how many checkpoints the Greys blockade, how many trams the Greys destroy, the low colors will seep through the cracks because they made this place. Because they have allies among the mid-colors, thanks to Quicksilver. They open derelict transportation tunnels, hijack cargo ships in the industrial sector, pack them full of men and women, and steer them for the luxury hangars in the Needles, or even toward the public Skyresh interplanetary spaceport, where cruise liners and passenger ships are being loaded with evacuees. I'm remotely jacked into Quicksilver's security grid, watching high colors stampede over one another, carrying luggage and valuables and children. Martian Navy Ripwings and fast-moving fighters dart through the towers, shooting down the rebel ships rising from the hollows toward the Needles. The debris from a destroyed low-color skiff crashes through the vaulted glass and steel ceiling of a Skyresh terminal, killing civilians and shattering any illusion I might have had that this war would be sanitary. Ducking away from a mob of low-colors, Holiday and I arrive outside a derelict hangar in the old freight garages, which haven't been used since before the time of Augustus. It's quiet here, abandoned. The old pedestrian entrance is welded shut. Radiation signs warn potential scavengers away, but the doors open for us with a deep groan when a modern retinal scanner built into the metal registers my irises, as Quicksilver said it would. The hangar is a vast rectangle, skinned with dust and cobwebs. In the center of the hangar's deck sits a silver 70-meter-long luxury yacht, shaped like a sparrow in flight. It's a custom-built model out of the Venusian shipyards, ostentatious, fast, and perfect for an obscenely wealthy war refugee. Quicksilver plucked it from his fleet to help us blend in with the migrating upper class. Its rear cargo plank is down, and inside the bird is filled to capacity with black crates stamped with the Sun Industries winged heel, inside of which are several billion credits worth of high-tech weapons and equipment.
Gotta love deep pockets. The fuel would cost my annual wages twice over.
We cross the hangar to meet Quicksilver's pilot. The trim young blue waits at the bottom of the ramp. She has no eyebrows, and her head is bald. Winding blue lines pulse beneath the skin where subdermal synaptic links connect her remotely to the ship. She snaps to attention, eyes wide. Clearly, she had no idea who she was transporting until now.
Sir, I am Lieutenant Vesta. I'll be your pilot today, and I must say, it's an honor to have you on board.
There's three levels to the yacht. The upper and bottom for gold use, the middle for cooks, servants, and crew. There's four staterooms, a sauna, and creme leather seats with dainty little chocolates and napkins sitting primly on armrests in the passenger cabin to the far back of the cockpit. I pocket one, and then a couple more. As Holiday and Vesta prep the ship, I strip off my pulse armor in the passenger cabin and unpack winter gear from one of the boxes. I dress in skin-tight nanofiber weave that's much like scarab skin, but instead of black, it's mottled white and looks oily, except for textured grips on the elbows, gloves, buttocks, and knees. It's crafted for polar temperatures and water immersion. It's also 100 pounds lighter than our pulse armor, is immune to digital component failures, and has the added benefit of not needing batteries. Much as I enjoy using 400 million credits worth of technology to make me a flying human tank, sometimes warm pants are more valuable, and we'll always have the pulse armor if we need it in a pinch. I'm struck by the silence in the cargo bay and the hangar as I finish lacing my boots. There's still 15 minutes left on my datapad's timer, so I sit on the edge of the ramp, legs dangling off, to wait for Ragnar. I pull the chocolates from my pocket and slowly peel the foil off. Taking half a bite, I let the chocolate sit on my tongue, waiting for it to melt, as I always do. And as always, I lose patience and chew it before the bottom half is melted through. Eo would make candy last for days, when we were lucky enough to have it. I set my datapad on the ground and watch the helmet cameras of my friends as they wage my war for Phobos. Their chatter trembles out of the datapad's speakers, echoing in the vast metal chamber. Zevro's in his element, rushing through the central ventilation unit with hundreds of suns loading themselves into the air ducts. I feel guilty for sitting here watching them, but we each have our parts to play. The door we entered through opens with a groan, and Ragnar and two of the obsidian howlers enter the room. Fresh from the battlefield, Ragnar's white armor is dented and stained.
"Did you play gently with the fools, my goodman?"
In reply, he tosses up to me a Karul, a twisted gold scepter of power given to high-ranking military officers. This one is tipped with a screaming banshee and a splash of crimson.
"The tower has fallen. Rollo and the Sons finish my work. These are the stains of Sub-Governor Priscilla Aucon."
"Well done, my friend."
Taking the scepter in my hands, I see it is carved with the deeds of the Khan family, which owned the two moons of Mars, and once followed Bellona to war. Among great warriors and statesmen, there's a young man I recognize, standing by a horse.
"What is wrong?"
"Nothing. I knew her son, is all. Priam. He seemed decent enough."
"Decent is not enough. Not for their world."
With a grunt, I bend the Karul against my knee and toss it back to him to show my agreement.
"Give it to your sister. Time to go."
Glancing back at the hangar with a frown, he checks his datapad and files past me into the cargo hold. I try to wipe the blood from the Karul off of my white suit's leg. It just smears over the oily fabric, giving me a red stripe on my thigh. I close the ramp behind me. Inside, I help Ragnar out of his pulse armor and let him slip into the winter gear as I join Holiday and Vesta as they initiate pre-flight launch.
"Remember, we're refugees. Aim for the largest convoy heading out of here and stick to them."
Vesta nods. It's an old hangar, so it has no pulse field. All that separates us from space are 5-story tall steel doors. They rumble as the motors begin to retract them into the ceiling and floor.
"Stop!"
Vesta sees what caught my attention a second after I do, and her hand flashes to the controls, stopping the doors before they part and open the hangar to vacuum.
"I'll be damned."
Holiday peers out the cockpit to a small figure blocking our ship's path to space.
"It's the Lion."
Mustang stands in front of the ship, illuminated by our headlights. Her hair washed white by the blinding light. She blinks as Holiday cuts the headlights from the cockpit, and I make my way to her through the dim hangar. Her dancing eyes dissect me as I come. They dart from my sigil-barren hands to the scar I've kept on my face. What does she see? Does she see my resolve? My fear? In her, I see so much. The girl I fell in love with in the snow is gone, replaced in the last 15 months by a woman. A thin, intense leader of vast and enduring strength and alarming intellect. Eyes kinetic, ringed by circles of exhaustion and trapped in a face made pale from long days in sunless lands and metal halls. Everything she is dwells behind her eyes. She has her father's mind, her mother's face, and a distant, foreboding sort of intelligence that can give you wings or crush you to the earth. And just at her hip sits a ghost cloak with a cooling unit. She has watched us since we arrived. How did she get inside the hangar?
Lo, Reaper.
Lo, Mustang.
I searched the rest of the hangar.
How did you find me?
She frowns in confusion.
I thought you wanted me to come. Ragnar told Kavax where I could find you. Oh, you didn't know?
No.
I look back up at the ship's mirror cockpit windows, where Ragnar must be watching me. The man's overstepped his bounds. Even as I arranged a war, he went behind my back and endangered my mission. Now I know exactly how Sevro felt.
Where have you been?
With your brother.
Then the execution was a ruse, meant to make us stop looking.
There's so much to say. So many questions and accusations that could fly between us. But I didn't want to see her because I don't know where to begin. What to say? What to ask for?
I don't have time for small talk, Mustang. I know you came to Phobos to surrender to the Sovereign. Now, why are you here, talking to me?
Don't talk down to me. I wasn't surrendering. I was making peace. You're not the only one with people to protect. My father ruled Mars for decades. Its people are as much a part of me as they are part of you.
You left Mars at the mercy of your brother.
I left Mars to save it. You know everything is a compromise. And you know it's not Mars. You're angry at me for leaving.
I need you to stand aside, Mustang. This is not about us, and I don't have time to bicker. I'm leaving. So either you move, or we open the door and fly through you.
Fly through me? You know I didn't have to come alone. I could have come with my bodyguards. I could have lain in wait to ambush you, or reported you to the Sovereign to salvage the peace you ruined. But I didn't. Can you stop for a single moment to think why?
She takes a step forward.
You said to me in that tunnel that you want a better world. Can't you see that I listened? That I joined the Moon Lords because I believe in something better.
Yet you surrendered.
Because I could not watch my brother's reign of terror continue. I want peace.
This is not the time for peace.
Gory hell, you're thick. Why do you think I'm here? Why do you think I've worked with Orion and kept your soldiers at their stations?
I examine her.
I honestly don't know.
I'm here because I want to believe in you, Darrow. I want to believe in what you said in that tunnel. I ran from you because I didn't want to accept that the only answer was the sword. But the world we live in has conspired to take everything I love away. My mother, my father, my brothers. I will not let it take the friends I have left. I will not let it take you.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that I'm not letting you out of my sight. I'm coming with you.
It's my turn to laugh.
You don't even know where I'm going.
You're wearing sealskin. Ragnar's on board. You've declared open rebellion. Now you're leaving in the middle of the largest battle the Rising has ever seen. Really, Darrow? It doesn't take a genius to deduce that you're now using this ship to pretend to be a gold refugee, to escape and go to the Valkyrie Spires to beseech Ragnar's mother to provide an army.
Damn. I try not to let my surprise show. This is why I did not want to involve Mustang. Inviting her into the game is adding another dimension I can't control. She could destroy my gambit with a single call to her brother, to the Sovereign, telling them where I'm going. Everything relies on misdirection, on my enemies thinking I am on Phobos. She knows what I'm thinking. I can't let her leave this hangar.
The Telmanuses know as well.
She knows my mind.
But I'm tired of having insurance plans against you. Tired of playing games. You and I have pushed each other away because of broken trust. Aren't you tired of that? Of the secrets between us? Of the guilt?
You know I am. I laid my secrets bare in the tunnels of Lycos.
Then let this be our second chance. For you. For me. For both our people. I want what you want.
And when you and I are aligned, when have we ever lost? Together, we can build something, Darrow.
You're suggesting an alliance?
Yes. The might of House Augustus and Telmanis and Arcos, united with the Rising, with the Reaper, with Orion and all her ships, the society would tremble.
Millions will die in that war. You know that. The Peerless Skard will fight to the last gold. Can you stomach that? Can you watch that happen?
To build, we must break. I was listening.
Still, I shake my head. There's too much to overcome between us, between our people. It would be a qualified victory, on her terms. How could I ask my men to trust a gold army? How could I trust you?
You can't. That's why I'm coming with you. To prove I believe in your wife's dream. But you have to prove something to me. That you are worthy of my trust in turn. I know you can break. I need to see that you can build. I need to see what you will build. If the blood we will shed is for something. Prove that, and you have my sword. Fail, and you and I will go our separate ways.
She cocks her head at me.
So, what do you say, Helldiver? Do you want to give it one more go?
I help unbuckle Mustang's pulse armor in the cargo hold.
Cold gear is in here, boots in there.
Quicksilver gave you the keys to his armory?
She eyes the winged heel on the boxes.
How many fingers did it cost him?
None. He's the son of Ares.
What now?
I grin, comforting, knowing the world isn't an open book for her. The engines rumble, and the ship rises underneath us.
Get dressed, and join us in the cabin.
I leave her behind to change in private. I was more gruff than I intended, but it felt strange, smiling in her presence. I find Ragnar leaning back in his chair in the passenger cabin, eating chocolates, white boots up on the adjacent armrest.
No offense, but what the hell are you doing?
Holiday stands, arms crossed between the cockpit and the passenger cabin.
Sir.
Taking a risk. I know it might seem strange to you, Holiday, but I go back with her.
She's the definition of the elite. Worse than Victra, her father...
Killed my wife. So if I can stomach it, so can you.
Holiday makes a whistling sound and heads back to the cabin, unhappy with our new ally.
So the Mustang joined our quest.
She's getting dressed. You had no right to let Kavix go, much less tell him where we would be. What if they gave us up, Ragnar? What if they ambushed us? You would never have seen your home. If they find out we're there, they'll never let your people off the surface. They'll kill them all. Did you think of that?
He eats another chocolate.
A man thinks he can fly, but he is afraid to jump. A poor friend pushes him from behind. A good friend jumps with.
You've been reading Stoneside, haven't you?
Ragnar nods.
Theodora gave it to me. Lorne Au Arcos was a great man.
He'd be glad you think so. But take everything with a grain of salt. The biographer took some liberties, especially in his early life.
Lorne would have told you that we need her. Now in war, and after in peace. If we do not bring her to our cause, then we will not win until every gold is dead. That is not why I fight.
Ragnar rises to greet Mustang as she joins us. The last time they stood eye to eye, she had a gun pointed at his head.
Ragnar, you've been busy since I last saw you. Not a gold alive doesn't know and fear your name. Thank you for releasing Kavix.
Family is dear, but I warn you, we go to my lands. You are under my protection. If you play your tricks, if you play your games, that protection is forfeit. And even you will not survive long on the ice without me, daughter of the Lion. Do you understand.
Mustang bows her head, respectfully.
I do. And I will repay your faith in me, Ragnar. I promise you that.
Enough chatter. Time to buckle up.
Holiday snaps from the cabin. Vesta's synced with the ship and pushing out of the hangar. We find our seats. There's 20 to choose from, but Mustang takes the one next to me in the left aisle. Her hand grazes my hip accidentally as she reaches for her seat harness.